November 1st, 2000. And I'm in the home of Lou Slager in Timonium, Maryland. How old are you, Mr. Slager?
74.
And where were you born?
St. Louis.
And were you brought up there?
I lived in St. Louis until 1940. My folks moved up here with 80 families from something my father worked for. Along with I've been a member and native member, so, not a native.
Resident.
Resident.
Okay. When did you first get interested in baseball?
Well, I was a little kid going to the Browns games and Cardinals games. I was a member of that whole gang in St. Louis. So I always, and then on, playing all sports when you're a little kid. But I really, really wanted to be a baseball player.
And did you have any preference between the Browns and the Cardinals?
The Browns. I like the Browns a lot better. The Browns were sort of the underdog in St. Louis. It's a lot easier to go to the ball games in that whole gang with the Browns than it was in the Cardinals.
Okay. Did you have any favorite players growing up?
Probably, I guess, Harlan Clift, C-L-I-F-T, was a third baseman for the Browns. I liked him.
Right. They played for the Senators a little later, too.
Did he?
Okay. And were you always a pitcher?
Well, I was always a good hitter. And I played all positions. Of course, I was left-handed. I played first base for the outfield.
Okay. And in high school, how did your teams do in high school?
Well, I went to Mount St. Joseph's in Hinesville, Irvington, really. And we won the Maryland Scholastic Championship for the last year. And I pitched the first game. We played Poly. And pitched the first game with the three, best of two out of three. And we beat Poly the first game at St. Joe. I won that game. And the second game, we played at their home field, which was Bloomingdale Oval. And they beat us. And I played the outfield in that game. In the third game, we played in Old Oriole Park, and I won that game because it's a two-hit shutout. And funny story, it was 1944. And 2 weeks after that, Oriole Park burned down.
One of the last games there.
Yeah. That was one of the things you always look forward to playing. It was historically the championship game was played at Old Oriole Park.
That was what, 1944?
1944, yeah.
Okay. And I guess you always favored pitching.
Well, pretty much, yeah. Although I was a good, in those days, a hitter, you always hit when you were pitching, and I was a good hitter. And I played the outfield and something when I was like in high school, and then when I signed, I'd fill in once in a while and hide in the outfield. Pinch hitting or something.
Were you in the military service?
I went to the Navy in September of 44. I was in there for 2 years.
Now, how did you get into organized baseball?
Well, I signed out of St. Joe, went to with the Braves in Boston, and worked out. And there was three of us went up there, and we had already agreed that it was the Giants, the Yankees, and the Braves were interested in me. And, the Braves made the best offer, and I had a chance to go to Notre Dame for football and baseball, and I needed a couple of credits, and they wanted me to go to summer school, and of course, knowing I had to go into service and everything, and at that time, you didn't know when the Second World War was going to end, so I always wanted to be a baseball player, and professional ball player, and so rather than go to summer school, and it was the furthest thing from my mind. So I signed with the Braves.
Those days, you haven't got a bonus?
Yeah, I got a bonus, yeah.
How much was it?
Well, I'd rather not say.
Okay, all right. Okay, so
it was a nominal thing. That was under $5,000.
Okay. Now, in 1946, we're at Hartford in Eastern Michigan.
Right.
That was a Braves part.
After I got out of service, yeah. Yeah. Just briefly. When I played the outfield a couple games too. That's where we had a bunch. They had a whole bunch of people come back from service and everything, and they would you'd be on the inactive list, and then they had put you, you know, they were jockeying guys back and forth. And so I was there, like you say, just briefly.
Remember who the manager was?
Dutch Dorman. He was the manager.
Yeah.
Nice man. He was from York, Pennsylvania.
In 1947, you started with Raleigh, Carolina.
Right.
Is it still with the Braves?
Well, yeah, it was an independent thing. The Braves, I was in spring training, and the Braves released me right before spring training, and I already committed to you know, going away. So Raleigh was an independent, and the Braves Hartford trainer, as a matter of fact. So I went away with Raleigh just briefly. And
when you went to spring training with the Braves, what was some of the prominent players?
I wasn't with the big league club at spring training.
Oh, you were?
No, just Hartford. Ernie Johnson, who later played with the Braves, he was there with Hartford. And you didn't think of anybody else on the end that was any came up to the big leagues.
Then looks like we were with Raleigh just for about one game, and then you went to Davenport and the Three Islands.
Well, Raleigh. Whether I had a short arm or what, but I was just with him briefly, and then there was something about money or something in 30 days, so I just got my release and came home. And then I pitched Sandlot ball here for a while, and a fellow, a couple of scouts wanted to sign me, so I signed with the Cubs.
Okay, so Davenport was there?
That's when I went to Davenport, yeah.
Okay. And remember who the manager was there?
In fact, Dickie Lee, who was the lone left-hand pitcher, was in the Boston, or not, excuse me, the Chicago White Sox scandal. He was the manager of Davenport. That's where I live. Remember the scandal?
The Black Sox?
Black Sox scandal. Yeah.
And then later that year, you went to Ogdensburg.
Ogdensburg, which was...
Where was that?
It's right on the St. Lawrence River.
It's a
beautiful town, the best thing ever happened in baseball. Really loved it. And I finished up the year there and came back there the next year. I went to spring training with Sioux Falls, which is a Cub farm. You got me down for Sioux Falls there?
Sioux Falls, yeah, later that year,
yeah.
48, you started with Ottenberg and then went to Sioux Falls.
No, the other way around. I went to Sioux Falls and then I went to Ogdensburg.
Okay.
Because it was the Cub Forum. Sioux Falls was the Cub Forum. And Davenport optioned me the year before to Ogdensburg. And then Sioux Falls was the Cub Forum in 48, I guess it was. And Ogdensburg had a good year at Ogdensburg the year before. I don't even know what my record was, but they
4-1 the previous year.
And they wanted me back, so they bought me from Sioux Falls. In those days, the minor leagues were hit ball players coming out of their ears all over the place, a lot of minor league teams. So Ogdensburg bought me, and then my career sort of took off.
Yeah, you had a lot of innings. You had 171 innings.
Yeah.
Compared to what you.
And then we won the playoffs that year too.
The teams you played against, anybody special that you know of? I'll
stop after this interview. I'll probably think of about 10 of them, but I can't. I'm trying to think. Johnny Logan, I played against him. Played against with him later at the Braves. And he was at Hartford. That's, he was at Hartford too, with Ernie Johnson. And I'm trying to think right now. Offhand, I can't remember.
Then next year, you were with Jacksonville, the South Atlanta.
Right.
You're still with the Cubs.
Well, the Giants bought me. See, I was in Ogdensburg was independent. They bought me from Sioux Falls that year. And so I was sold from Ogdensburg to Jacksonville, which was then a Giant farm.
And you had 237 innings, 14 wins, 13 losses.
Fine. We had, at Jacksonville, it was Hoyt Wilhelm, myself, George Spencer, who later went up with the Giants as a relief pitcher. And we They all had earned run averages under three, like 2.7 or 2.8.
Very good at 2.77.
And then, well, I would, Hoyt won 16 games, I won 14. George would have won either 12 or 13. We finished seventh. So we didn't have too good a hitting club. But that was a good league. That was a good league, the Sally League.
Was that double A? Or?
That was A ball, Sally League. In fact, Tommy Lasorda, he started out with Greenville that year, the Dodger form. Was his first, not his first year, but he was, that was a good, he was in Greenville, which was a good Dodger farm club.
And the next year, you went to Texas League, San Antonio.
Right, right. Well, the Giants had not picked me up in spring training.
Well, you actually with the team in? With the Giants.
Phoenix, yeah. The next year, because I had a good year. And they bought my contract. And then in spring training, something happened where my name went on a waiver list, and they couldn't take it off or something. And the Browns claimed me on waivers. So I pitched one inning with the Browns. Went back to my old hometown. One inning with the Browns in 1950, and one hitless inning.
Right, the ERA is zero.
Yeah. And then I was of course I needed it. At that time I wasn't ready for the big league. I was optioned to San Antonio, where we had a good year there, and then we won the Dixie Series too. We finished fourth. And,
that was between the Texas Southern Association.
Right, that's right. You had a good memory. Beat Nashville.
Now, when you pitched that one inning for St. Louis, that was your first major league game.
Right.
Do you remember anything special about it?
Struck out Vic Wirtz. And,
they were playing in Detroit?
They were, yeah, Detroit. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Of course, at that time, I thought I was unhappy because they opted me out. In hindsight, you look back, you knew you needed some experience. And, but it was, you know, it's nice to come back to your hometown and pitch. I'd like to have had more opportunity, but so be it now, you know.
Were there any family members in the crowd? Or just
not that there? Night, no. The next year there was relatives who used to come to the games.
In the 51, you started with the Browns.
With the Browns, yeah.
Who was the manager?
In 51, it was Zach Taylor. I had a 1-9. I pitched pretty good ball. Of course, we finished last by a lot of games. That was the year the only guy that had a good year was Ned Garber.
Won
20 games. And at the end of that year, I went to Kansas City in the American Association. The Browns got Cliff Mapes from the Yankees and Bobby Hogue. The Yankees needed a relief pitcher. Bobby Hogue went to the Yankees, and Kermit Wall and myself were optioned to Kansas City, because Kansas City was fighting for the pennant. And that was a Triple-A club then, the Yankee club. And that was right probably in August I went out there. I did pretty good there, too.
And with the Browns that year, basically the starting pitcher.
Yeah. And I remember one game in St. Louis that I lost it 4-3, and there was two unearned runs, and Ted Williams hit a home run off me in the 10th inning to beat me the game. He got a home run to get the fourth run. I made a mistake of trying to throw a fastball by him.
Okay. Then the next year, 52, you started with St. Louis.
Right. And that was, we trained in California. We trained in 51 in California, too. And that was, unfortunately, the only person in baseball I never liked. I always had good rapport with my manager. I mean, the manager was Rogers Hornsby, who was, to me was just a bad human being. Nobody liked him. He was crude. He was, all he talked about is when he was a hitter and played ball. But fortunately, I got away from there and I was traded to the Senators for Cass Michaels. Bill Beck was the owner then. He was a nice man, a real nice man. And later on, he fired Hornsby and put Marty Marin as the manager of the Browns.
Now, Beck was a big promoter. Was anything special promotion that you can remember?
It's funny, in 51, when I was sent to Kansas City, a week later is when the midget played. It was a week later. Nobody knew anything about it at that time. But,
players didn't know either.
No, he kept him. And Eddie Gaydell was a midget. He pinch hit for Frank Sauchet.
And
Bobby Kane was a pitcher for Detroit. Bob Swift was a catcher. Ed Hurley was the umpire. And Jim Delsey ran for Eddie Gaydell when he got first base. That's probably was Bill Beck's greatest promotion or trick or whatever you want to call it. And after that, they put a rule in that, because he signed the night before with the contract, I think, and Ed Hurley, Zach Taylor brought the contract down to Ed Hurley to show him. And the next day, I think they put a rule in that it had to be 24 hours to clear before they could play or put a ball player in there.
Were there any other promotion? What do you mean?
Well, he was like somebody hit a home run or something, he'd say free beer for everybody in the ballpark or things like that. He was just a nice person. And unfortunately, didn't have that much money to compete with the Cardinals. The Cardinals were the number one team in St. Louis, and they outdrew the Browns tremendously.
You both played the same ballpark.
Right, Sportsman's Park.
So probably it was a game in Sportsman's Park pretty much all summer long.
Pretty much, yeah. And in July, the grass would get a little shaky and wasn't much grass, and the ground would get hard with the St. Louis summers. But you're right. There wasn't much time for to work on the grass or to water the field or anything when the team went on the road, because when one team went on the road, the other team took over.
Of course, it was pretty hot in St. Louis.
Real bad. Real hot summer. Dry summer.
Did the Browns and Cardinals have any kind of, like, exhibition series before the season or maybe after the season?
We played in 51. Before the season opened, we played the Cardinals. They would train in Florida. We'd train in California. We'd meet them in Houston to play a couple games. And then we'd come in St. Louis and play a couple games. In fact, in Houston in 51, Ned Garber pitched a no-hitter for 8 innings and shut him out for 8 innings. They took him out for a pinch hitter in the top of the ninth, and so we scored a run, and then I came in and pitched the ninth inning. Fortunately, I got him out 1-2-3 in the big thing.
That was a no-hitter.
And the last hitter and the whole thing was a guy named Stan Musial.
He
grounded out to second. And I often wonder how many times he was the last out of a no-hitter in his career. That'd be interesting to find out, and I never did see him answer that.
Was that the only time you faced Musial?
Oh, no, I faced him in 56 when I was with the Braves and he was with the Cardinals. I had pretty good luck with him, and I say luck because you don't get a hitter out like that regularly. You don't get the best of them. It's just you got to mix up your pitches and hopefully he won't hurt you too bad.
Now, when you were traded to Washington from St. Louis, where were you traded? Okay. Where were you traded for?
Cass Michael.
And Bucky Harris was a manager?
Yes, Bucky Harris was a manager. He was a nice man, good manager.
And Eddie Yost was on that team?
Eddie Yost, Mickey Vernon, Pete Rollins.
A couple of batting champions.
Yeah, and Jim Busby was a center fielder. Kenny Wood was my roommate with the Browns. He was a right fielder. Had the best arm of anybody I ever saw as an outfielder. Now, a guy like Rocky Colavito had a stronger arm, but he would just hit ball was so hard, the third baseman or somebody would go home with a catcher. Catch it in self-defense, you know. But Kenny Wood just had a good, strong arm, accurate in the ball, and he always, you know, threw the ball to bounce in right and everything. And unfortunately, the next year with the Senators, he hurt his arm. He threw it. I think it happened with the Browns the year before. That's right. And It's a cold night or something. He threw it off balance and he felt something tear in his shoulder.
Was the Cripple Stadium with the pitcher's part?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Big part.
Did you have any deal with the owner, Clark?
Yeah. Yeah, he was fair. Just another owner. He was another one that was didn't have much of a bankroll. The guy got to a certain, like Mickey Vernon was traded away, and also Sid Hudson was traded away. The story was, if he got successful to a certain degree, he couldn't afford to pay you that much money. We had to, like Connie Marrero was a pitcher there, Sandy Consuegra, Julio Marino, they had the Cuban ball players there.
Around this time, what kind of salary did you get?
I don't like to talk a lot about salary. I was making around $10,000 a year.
Was that about average?
A little more, because I was a good hitter.
Did you ever do any pitching?
With the Browns, I did, yeah. But they, you never made that much in those days.
I guess
and it was a yearly contract, so it wasn't any.
I guess in the offseason,
Oh, you had to work. You start thinking in September about what you're going to do in the offseason. And, of course, nowadays, they don't have that problem. They can work out. You'd have to work out on your own in the offseason, like go to the Y or things like that. Nowadays, they have the use of the facilities and the weight room. Of course, ball players never lifted weights in those days when I played. Just played some recently. I don't know whether that's good or bad.
Now, you finished up that year in Chattanooga, which was in Washington.
Right, right. They, Washington wasn't going anywhere, and they were fighting for the pennant in Chattanooga. And I was the only guy who could be optioned out from the whole pitching staff, so they needed some pitching. That's where I went. I was a little upset with that because I had a pretty good year. In fact, I had twins who were born 2 months premature in July and 29th, 1952. And I waited around a couple weeks before I went down there because they were in the hospital for like 12 or 13 weeks. So I hesitated before I went down to make sure everything was all right.
Yeah, he was Chattanooga with Joe Engels.
Yep, he owned the ball club.
He was a showman too.
Yes, he was. Cal Ermer was the manager. Was from Baltimore, and I knew Cal before, played against him. He played for Savannah when I was in the Sally League in 49. And but getting back to Joe Engel, he didn't do too many things. Because we had a good ball club. He more or less left the promotion probably when the ball club wasn't doing any good. But he was a very nice owner. Of course, I was optioned from Washington, so I never had any financial feelings. But it was, Chattanooga was a Washington farm club.
And then the next year, you went to Toronto International.
Right, right.
And that was not a Washington farm
club. No, I was in spring training in 53.
With the Senators?
With the Senators, and unbeknownst to me, Jack Kent Cook bought me from, had an agreement with Mr. Griffith, and I think he bought me for $25,000, which was supposed to be the most paid for pitcher going from the major leagues to the minors, and I don't know what it's still, that was unheard of in those days. So I went down there, and Jack Kent Cook was the owner at that time.
Of course, he's better known for the Redskins. Redskins.
Oh, sure. Yeah, but, that was years and years later.
Did you have any dealings with
Cook? Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was fair. In those days, he was like a fan, and he was a front runner. If you were going good, you were. His box was right outside the dugout there, and he'd clap and say, "Yeah, way to go, Lou." If you were getting hit hard or something, everything would be silent. It was like a joke amongst the ball players. But he was more of a fan, really, at that time.
And playing in Canada, were the fans any different than...
Not really. Not really. The two teams in Canada then were... Oh, take it back, three teams. Ottawa and... I don't know whether Ottawa was in that league or not that year. Yes, they were. Yeah, it was Ottawa and Montreal and Toronto.
We didn't really get a lot of travel.
Well, we had 8 teams in each league then. 16 teams in the majors. And now I guess they got, 400 more ballparks in the major league now. Maybe more than that.
45.
Yeah.
And you started off 54. Next year also with Toronto, so then you went to Charleston.
I went to Charleston. And I was optioned out from Toronto.
When you went to Toronto, that was independent?
Right, Jack Kent Cook was independent. And he was had ball players coming and going and everything. In fact, we had we finished fifth or something in Toronto, 53. So 54, I was optioned to Charleston in the American Association. And that's when I made the All-Star team here. I think I was, 7-7 there? But I pitched
seven,
good.
Well, 7-7, right.
And I pitched good ball, and my ERA was good on it.
3-0-2.
Yeah. We finished either 7th or 8th there.
You also played with Kansas City that year.
I was at Kansas City, bought me at the end of the year. I went over to Kansas City, and
that was a Yankee corner club?
That was a Yankee, yeah. And the first game or second game, I didn't pitch many games there. Right at the end of the year, didn't I?
That'll happen right there.
But I pulled a muscle. I tore a muscle in my leg running to first base and missed the rest of the year. And I was possibly could have went up to New York, but they bought me in the offseason, the Yankees, between the winter of 54, 55.
And in 55, you started with Kansas City.
In 55, I was with the Yankees in spring training in the first month of the season.
Okay, so I guess the Mantle and Barron.
Oh, all of them got it, yeah. Which was, I'll tell you, was a terrible disappointment. I had a pretty good spring. And then we played the Dodgers in the last, they had like a weekend series. Not a week, they played one in the Mayor's game or something.
Up in New York?
Yeah, one year they played in Yankee Stadium, next year they played it in Ebbets Field. And I pitched a couple innings at Ebbets Field, and I sat on the bench. It was a cold day, but I forgot to bring a sweatshirt, and I caught a cold in my arm, probably. And I had my arm really hurt. I missed about 3 weeks during the season with the Yankees. I sat, I had a lot of games I could have got into, probably, if my arm was. And I missed that and started throwing again. Tell you the truth, I missed probably almost half the year or two-thirds of the year my arm bothered me at 55. And of course nowadays with all this medical technology and everything, 55 you never had that. So I probably could have, but it was a dumb thing on my part not bringing a sweatshirt. One of those things you ride because we took a bus from Yankee Stadium over to Ebbets Field and just used the dressing room to change what you
went to Columbus and also
right.
That was
Columbus and Toledo.
And Toledo, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Columbus was that was a Yankee farm club. And then in the end of the year, Toledo, I played for George Selkirk, who was the manager of Toledo, the Braves farm club. And I played for him in 51 with Kansas City when the Browns sent me down to Kansas City. So he needed a pitcher, and he bought me from Columbus. And I came over there, and I helped him. We got in the playoffs there, I think. And he was instrumental in me being drafted by the Braves in 56.
So they moved to Milwaukee, by the way.
Right, they moved to Milwaukee, I think it was in 53.
So I guess you played with Matthews and Aaron?
Oh, yeah.
And Spine and Burdett.
That's what I know about Bobby Thompson. Henry Aaron replaced. That was the first year Henry Aaron, Hank Aaron, led the league. He led the league in 56.
In batting.
He hit the ball to all fields in those days. He was a great hitter, even then. I think that might have been his second year or something. But he... you can tell he was just a great hitter. you know, Dad Cock and Joe Torre, or Frank Torre, Joe Torre's brother, were the first baseman, and our roommate Danny O'Connell was second. Logan was the shortstop, Eddie Mathews was third, and Bill Bruton was center fielder, Hank Aaron was left fielder, right fielder, and Wes Covington and Bobby Thompson played left field. And Del Pando and Del Rice were the pitchers.
Pretty decent pitchers.
Yeah. I had a good year there. A real good year. And what?
2-2.
said, like I started saying, I had a good year with Milwaukee that year. I was in 25-30 ball games. And I saved quite a few, not quite a few, but five or six or something. But they didn't keep a good record of saves in those days. That wasn't a big, you know. And then that was the saddest career day of year of my baseball career, because we had a one-game lead with three games to play, and not to dwell too long on this thing, for to win the pennant. Now, we never had playoffs or anything in those days.
Who were you contending with?
The Dodgers in Ebbets Field. Now, the Dodgers played the Pirates in Ebbets Field the last three games of the season. We played the Cardinals in St. Louis, Sportsman's Park, the last three games of the season.
And
we had a one-game lead. We beat Cincinnati on a... beat two games in Cincinnati, and then we had a day off, or we went to into St. Louis to work out, the day off, and then we played them on a Friday night, and they beat, I think it was Lou Burdette, or Bob Buell. Burdette, Buell, and Spahn were the three big pitchers then. And so the Dodgers, we were tied with the Dodgers after Friday night. Saturday, the Dodgers beat the Pirates on Saturday afternoon. So we played the night game with the Cardinals, and we knew we had to beat the Cardinals to stay tied with the Dodgers. So Spahn pitched one of the best ball games I ever saw a guy pitch in his life. We got a home run in the first inning. I forget who it was hit the home run. I thought it was Aaron, but somebody corrected me on this. That wasn't Aaron. And we were getting men on base left and right and all that. It was a 1-0 ball game until the seventh. Herman Wehmeyer was the pitcher for the Cardinals. And they got a runoff Spahn. Somebody hit a single and a double or something. It was a legitimate run. So now we go to, I think it was the 10th inning. We were tied. And Musial got a double off the screen. And Rip Rapolsky hit a ground ball off the Eddie Matthews' knee in the 10th inning. They scored and won the ballgame. And we go in the dressing room, and I always admired Spahn, Bonnie as we call him, because he cried like a baby after we won the dressing room.
He had pitched the whole
game. Pitched the whole ballgame. Pitched his heart out. He really had good stuff that night. So the next day, we played the Cardinals again. Now the Dodgers got a one-game lead, and they had the scoreboard in left field there, and you could see the scoreboard for the East Coast was 1 hour ahead of the Midwest rather. And about the seventh inning, they put up the sign that the Dodgers beat the Pirates, and we lost the pennant. So it's funny, we had. I had my family was going to come out, my friends were going to come out for tickets and everything. When you're making reservations and you're going from the penthouse to the outhouse. And the funny thing about it is that I think the winning share that year for the World Series was $8,500, and we got $1,800 for finishing second. In those days, with the money you make, that was a lot of money. But it was a good ball club. And that next spring, Juan Pizarro had won 20 games in the Jacksonville year, 56. So I went to spring training, and I was sort of the odd man out. And
Charleston.
And then I went to, well, I just went to Charleston briefly. And Detroit was waiting for, Detroit bought me. But they agreed by me, but they had to clear the roster or something, and get a waiver thing or something. So then I went to Detroit in 57.
Detroit had K-Line, Harvey Keene.
Ray Boone was the first baseman, who was the father of Bob Boone and Brett Boone, and the grandfather of Brett Boone and all that, and his other brother. And Harvey Keene was the shortstop. Reno Bertoia was the third baseman. Left fielder was Charlie Maxwell. Center fielder was Bill Tuttle. Al Kaline was the right fielder. Frank House and Red Wilson were the catchers. And that was the first year Jim Bunning won 20 games with Detroit in 57. But but we finished fourth that year. Jack Ty was the manager. We had a good ball club. It was a great bunch of guys, too.
Who's the manager?
Jack Ty. Okay. I didn't mean to jump ahead of you there on your question.
That's okay. Then in 58, you started with Detroit.
And then I didn't have that good of spring. And in fact, I had a good year with Detroit the year before, I think.
3-3.
Yeah. I hit three home runs that year with Detroit, too. And then the next year, the first month of the season, I hit a home run off Ray Narleski in Tiger Stadium, too. But I didn't have a good spring, good year, and then I was sold to Baltimore. And,
who's the manager?
Paul Richards.
Brooks Robinson was there?
Brooks was there part of the year. And his first full year was 59. But like I said, last year was his first year. Brooks came. Gene Woodley was there, Gus Triandos, Denny Brown was a pitcher, Mel Pappas was a pitcher. And all those young pitchers come up the next year when they all had good years.
How'd you get along with the umpires?
Fine. Umpires were, in those days, that if you had something to say, they'd let you have your say, and then you knew where they drew the line, and that was it. I never really complained with the umpires. I just, they missed a pitch, they'd tell the catcher I missed it. Nowadays, it seems like the umpires are looking for an argument all the time. They just rip off their mask and go after the players and everything else. It's completely changed around. They're drunk with power, I guess, or whatever it is.
Who was the toughest hitter?
Ted Williams. Never had, in 51, Joe DiMaggio's last year, that's when he had trouble with his heel and all that stuff and all his injuries. He played so many games, but I never had the opportunity to pitch against him. But Ted Williams, I'd say, getting back about DiMaggio, he retired after the year, but then Williams, pitched against Williams about, let's say, 12, 14 times. He hit a couple home runs, like he beat me in one game in St. Louis, and then with Detroit, he hit another homer off me, not the one he ball game, and got some singles. I got him out a few times, struck him out a couple times. But like with Stan Musial, I pitched against him probably six or seven times. And, pitched against Willie Mays once and struck him out. Pitched against Mantle. It was a teammate of Mantle's. Pitched against him a few times. Had pretty good luck with him. But Mantle wasn't a hitter like Musial and Williams were. You just never got them out any special way. You try and mix up your pitches and throw what they didn't expect, things like that.
What were your best pitches?
Probably my curveball. I had a good fastball. And I threw fastball, curve, and changeup. And then to Detroit, I fooled around with a knuckleball a little bit. But Paul Richards always wanted people to throw a slider. If I had a good curveball, I couldn't throw a slider. It just tried many times, different ways. That was one of his pet pitches, the slider. And,
wasn't Paul Richards the one that came up with that oversized
pitch? He's the one that, after I retired, Clint Courtney was a catcher. And, of course, Wilhelm, he had just a good knuckleball in 49 with Jacksonville when I was there with him. He did when he was in the big league. And he had like a knuckleball he'd throw to get till he got two strikes on you. And then he would throw the most god-awful knuckleball he ever would have seen. And that's where all them guys got the fast balls. So But Richards was a great, his mind was always working. And he came up with this idea, this huge myth. But if you couldn't catch it, at least you'd knock it down and keep it from getting by you. And
was there any controversy about that when it came out?
I'm trying to think. I think there was a rule later that they restricted the size of the myth. You couldn't, that thing looked like, because I remember seeing it on TV and I was at the ballpark several times and saw it. And it looked like a mattress almost with fingers in it. And, but he was a great innovator and everything. But it helped too. It kept a lot of balls from being wild pitches.
What was your biggest thrill?
First time I went to Yankee Stadium, ended up becoming a New York Yankee. Walking in the Yankee Stadium as a visiting ball player, and then walking in to the Yankee dressing room. And the saddest time was when I was when I had to go from the Yankees in '55 after the first month cut down date, and going to Kansas City. You know, but I always that was like the utopia of baseball, being a Yankee, and all because I think. In my mind, because I didn't bring an extra sweatshirt with me. That you always look back.
That's the course of your life.
Yeah. I figured that, you know, because those days the pitching staff was pretty well set, but the secondary pitchers, the backup pitchers, were not. And if you get into some ball games and do good, you'd stay there. But unfortunately, I missed a lot of time and I couldn't make it up.
How is baseball different today?
Smaller ballpark, smaller strike zone. Players are stronger, bigger, faster. But really, Ted Williams used to always say, why do you have to hit the ball 450 feet when the fence is 325 or 350? You just got to hit it 360, you know? And these guys are they're more vulnerable for swinging from their heels. They have the advantage of the smaller strike zone. And I think all this stuff about throwing at hitters and all that, which I don't like to talk about, but if the pitcher hit, the designated hitter changed all that. And if the pitcher had to go up and hit, that would...
At least in America.
Yeah. Like this thing with Roger Clemens in the World Series, you know. And I'm sure Joe Torre tried to... steer away from that by making him pitch the game at Yankee Stadium rather than. And speaking of Joe Torre, he went at the Braves in '56. We were going to New York. And we played the Giants for 3 games and the Dodgers for 3 games. And we'd stay in there, we'd be in there for a week. And just a little fat little 16-year-old guy would come out and work out with a team. Frank Torre's brother Joe, that's who's managing the Yankees now. He was a good kid. He was a pretty good prospect in those days, and it was. He turned out to be a great ball player in the big league.
So, after Baltimore 58, what did you say?
Well, I went to spring training in 59, and my son had his cerebral palsy, and he had some operations on his legs, and I went to spring training, and they wanted me to go to Miami. Paul Richards wanted me to go to Miami, which was the AAA farm club then of in the International League. And I said, well, Paul, I just got family. Said my son had to have a couple more operations. I said, well, I just better pack it in. So that's what I did.
What did you do after that?
I worked for this company called ABC Freight Forwarding Company since 53. It was Arthur Brown. Owned it. It was in New York, and you go out and sell freight on the to try and get them to ship it through your line and everything. And I did that in the off season for about 4 or 5 years. Then I worked with them for a year, and then I got into the steel business. And was in that ever since. Successful in sales, and made a nice living. And, still miss baseball. It was a great experience.
You go down to Camden Yards?
Didn't make any this year. I I get to go to ball. I go to ball games like once or twice a year. But I always figured that ball players, that's their sanctuary, and you like to leave them alone. They don't remember the old timers anyway.
Speaking of old timers, were you ever in any old timer games?
Not in the big leagues. I went to one in Prince William, Virginia a few years ago. And, Larry Doby there, Bob Feller, Ernie Banks, and I'm trying to think who else was there. But we were there and we played the promotion put on by the Toby Mill Shopping Center. And we went over and played. It was a Father's Day thing. And the kids rode in and got their fathers who would love to play ball, I guess. We played a game. It wasn't much of a game, but it was sort of a lot
That's
of fun.
That's a big name.
Tommy Mills?
No, I mean players.
Oh, yeah.
Do you keep in touch with any players?
Gus Triandos and Jim Bunning. Haven't talked to him. Wrote him a letter when he was elected to the Senate. Had contact with him and rather good letters with him when he was a congressman. And see Brooks, guys around Baltimore, see people like that. Talked to poor Gene Woodley, and he's pretty sick now. He had a real bad stroke out in Ohio, and I wrote him a couple of things like that. Ray Crone, who was with me and with the Braves, and my wife became friendly, and we were good friends too. He's a scout for the Orioles now. He used to come when he was in Baltimore. He'd call. I don't know. I think he's away from scouting now, or he retired or something. But he lived in Texas. He was from Connecticut originally.
What manager was the best player for?
Played for some good ones. Played for, of course, Casey Stengel. He was
with the Rays.
No, with the Yankees.
Oh, the Yankees.
And Charlie Grimm was the manager of the Braves, and he got fired in the, they picked us to win the pennant that year, and we had a bad road trip. We went into New York, and Fred Haney was the, who managed the Pirates for a couple years before that. They hired him as a coach, so when Charlie got fired, Fred Haney took over, and we won everything we did. When we lost, when that losing streak, I forget, maybe we lost 10 out of 11 or something. You know, we'd make an error at the wrong time, somebody would drop a fly ball, or somebody would strike out with a base. Everything went wrong, and then when Fred Haney took over, it was like everything went right. We won 12 in a row. but I enjoyed the Braves. I enjoyed all the ball clubs. It was a great experience.
Players you played with and against, did you come up with like an all-star team?
Well, let's see. Of course, the pitchers would be like Jim Bunning, Warren Spahn, Lou Burdett. And the catcher would be Gus Triandis, probably. Of course, Yogi, I was with him, but I didn't. I would clarify that by not pitching to him only in spring training games. He was a, you know, by himself. First base, I'd say Mickey Vernon. Second base, Frank Bowling was in Detroit. Shortstop would be, you got Pete Rome, you got Harvey Keene, both great hitters. Third base would naturally be Eddie Matthews. And Aaron, Kaline, I forget who it was, Bill Tuttle was a good center fielder. Somebody else was in there was a great center fielder. But Kaline played right. I'd have to go with probably Tuttle or Bill Bruton or something like that. Spahn, Burdett, Jim Bunning,
Garver.
Garver, that's right. He won 20 games at 51. And he was funny. He won a couple of games like 13 to 10 or 12 to 11 because he was a good hitter. You know, they left him in, and he would have these days he would never won 20 games but that way. But he had a great year that year. You got to give the guy credit for the last place ball club.
Carlton
won 22 for Liverpool. Yeah. Yeah, that was a tremendous feat.